ね。The winds of political change can blow pretty strongly by the time they reach Alaska. Good morning, and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Among those who seek the office of Lieutenant Governor is Republican Eddie Burke. By anyone's measure, a populist. Already a political activist, Eddie knows how to take phone calls. Our lines are open here at 1-800-478-8255-478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 855-0842. Email talk at aprn.org. Eddie Burke is our guest on Talk of Alaska. Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com.
Okay, we're in the studio with Eddie Burke, and of course, as we all know, we have breaking news, and our news department may enter the room at any moment with any kind of update. At last report, there were 9 people aboard a plane that crashed last night near Lake Elecnagik, and Ted Stevens is confirmed to have been aboard that plane. 5 are confirmed dead, and there was an earlier report that Stevens was among those confirmed dead, but now that has been the person that said that says, well, no, actually, I'm not sure. So the last report also, National Guard had been able to get a helicopter in there. And so we're awaiting further word and expecting it to come before too long. And meanwhile, Eddie and I sit here both having spent a bunch of time on the radio and knowing that probably you're going to want to talk about some of that. But we're also going to talk about his candidacy. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Eddie Burke.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. Sad day. We don't know the outcome of this, but obviously, no matter what political stripes you wear, you know, right, left, center, something, obviously Ted Stevens is somebody who has touched this state in many, many different ways. Not only touched state, but he's touched a lot of individuals. And yeah, there's a storm of controversy around him, but, you know, the things that I think his legacy kind of overshadows even that.
And it does. So,
and, you know, Ted had a real interesting way of being able to, even people who are, you know, I'm more conservative than Ted, but he could attract people like me and attract people with even over on the Democratic side. And so just an interesting way that he put his priorities, and it was, what did he say, the heck with politics, Alaska's first, or yeah, something like that. Words of that effect.
Yeah. The one that I'm thinking is, you know, he always knew what was best for Alaska, whether he was right or wrong.
Right.
and he would set about doing something about it. And when it comes to that category of doing something about it, there's not ever going to be his equal.
No, I think too. You know, he lived, I don't want to use the past tense. He governed, I guess, or was a senator at a time when, wow, the state was really growing. But maybe we'll look back at 50 years and say that growth spurt still continues. Yeah. But I mean, he really came in when Alaska was just kind of getting going, and was a big, a facilitator of a lot of things we see now that are here in Alaska.
Well, so here you are. I think the first time I ran into you, you were actually running a campaign with ACPERG, and it had to do with the permanent fund.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And so some people probably, you know, given your right-wing talk show, would be a little surprised to have seen you working with ACPERG, but that's what was going on,
right?
because there was definitely a move on for the permanent fund at that time. And so there you were. I think you still had a gas station at the time.
I may have. I'm not quite sure because there was, I just can't remember all the dates, but that's one of the times.
Well, is that what got you into politics?
No,
or were you always a political kind of guy?
You know what got me into politics, Steve, was when I was at the assembly chambers one night and I was in another room for something different and I can't remember what it was. But anyways, I walked over and I thought, I was 25 years old. I just bought my own Chevron station. I was downtown. And there was something going on in this other room, and I looked over there, and I thought, who are these potted plants sitting up there talking, and these people going and testifying in front of them? And I just out of the Navy a few years ago, and not really knowing much about politics in the city, so figured out, well, this is Anchorage Assembly, and what are they talking about? They're talking about homeless people. They're talking about the drunks on the street who are, what are they going to do with them? What are they going to do with the sleep-off shelter down at Brother Francis and all this? And I thought, are you kidding me? These people interrupt my business every single day. And that is the issue that got me going, because the drunks down there, the inebriates, really had an adverse effect on my business. And I mean, it's not major, but, you know, I had to deal with it. And so I let the assembly know how I felt as a business owner.
And that got you going.
And that got me going in politics. And from there, I had a campaign against now Senator Mark Begich. He beat me by 9 percentage points and out there in East Anchorage. And then,
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I'm one of the few who have run against Mark Begich.
Yeah.
I'm in his kill path.
Yeah, well, you and Ted Stevens.
Yeah, that's right. Ted Stevens and I have one thing. That's one thing in common Ted and I do is we've both been beat by Mark Begich.
So you ran for assembly, and what started you on this national campaign? Because I know you're definitely tied in with the Tea Party thing. I mean, when there was that first rally downtown where all of a sudden nobody knows where these thousands of people came from.
Right.
I mean, you were front and center there.
Well, you know, and even getting back to the permanent fund deal we talked about earlier, and that was a moment in which the right met left. And it was, you know, it was great. I mean, Steve Kahn and I can't remember all the people's names now. But anyways, we all came together and protected the permanent fund. I from the right, them from the left, for different reasons. But we came to say no, that the permanent fund is something that government shouldn't touch. It should be left alone for a plethora of different reasons. But let's see. Now, your question was...
Well, basically, I wanted to just get a little bio sketch in for our listeners and explain that you've had a talk radio show for a number of years now.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, kind of been a... I don't know what you call it, kind of a lightning rod.
Well, the Tea Party movement is it's just that, you know, I was interviewed by the Associated Press, Steve, and they asked me, you know, should the Tea Party movement ever be an actual organization? Should it become formal? I said, no, because you see, that's kind of what the Republican Party and the Democrat Party are. They're this organization that are formal and all, and they're there because, you know, I guess they have to be in some respects. But the Tea Party is really about a cause. It's about people who believe there's something wrong with their government. And it's generally more conservative folks who believe that spending mostly is too high and that we're in the ditch and we need to do something and that our country is headed in the wrong direction. These are people that are motivated from their heart. It's not about, you know, am I the precinct chairman or am I the chairman of the party or all. It's motive. People come out by the thousands because they believe something and they're disturbed by what direction this country is headed.
So you had to give up your talk show because of the equal time potential with the other candidates.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, how did you like that kind of work? I mean, and you know, frankly, you know, you could easily end up back there very shortly.
Hey, back on the radio is a great job, as you know.
There's no money in it. Let's start there.
No, there's no money. You're not going to get rich, you know. But it was, you can have an impact, I believe. You know, and people, I go across the state, especially here, of course, in South Central mostly, when I'm up at Palmer and the Fair or down in Kenai or here, and people say, hey, I miss you on the radio. I miss you on the radio. That means a lot to me. It really does. And the radio program was never about me. I'm a conservative. I'm proud of it. And I think the country is headed in the wrong direction for a number of reasons. But it was it's just a blast. You know, I always used to think, people said, you never go to work if you love your job. Or if you love your job, you never go to work. I knew the meaning of that every day at 2 o'clock when I got to sit behind the mic, put my headphones on, adjust the mic, and then wait for the countdown as you do in this very program.
Yeah. And it is. It's so much fun that it seems crazy. You get paid for doing this, you know?
Yeah.
it is, you know, at its best. It certainly is. It's extremely gratifying. And of course, that's not even to go into like when, you know, all the attaboys and dittos and whatnot that you get from people. So we're speaking with Eddie Burke. Eddie is running for lieutenant governor, and we haven't even gotten to statewide office, and we're 10 minutes into the show, Eddie. So I want to give out the phone number, which is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. You want to learn more about Eddie Burke? He's more than happy to tell you. He is running for lieutenant governor, and I'm wondering how that campaign is going. Mostly people that campaign statewide for the first time, and I think this is, includes you,
right?
Just say it is a blast. This is a much bigger state than I thought.
It is. I've been to Fairbanks 3 or 4 times. I've been down to Juneau a couple times. Been to Ketchikan, once. Of course, been up in the valley and here in South Central and all in the Kenai. And it is a blast. It's a different feel than just running out of an assembly district or a house district, something like that, because, you know, you walk the door to door and all. But here on this level, you're going around this state and you realize just how big of a state it is and how expensive it is. And, you know, that's been a problem is you when you're a grassroots candidate. You don't have, you know, these guys, a couple of my opponents, they put in $200,000 a piece of their own money into this campaign. Quite frankly, I don't have it to put in, and I don't know that I would do that even if I had the money. Just seems like an awful lot of money to put into a political race, but because, you know, if you look at what they've actually raised, they've raised about $60,000, I think. One of them did, and the other one raised about $100,000. Of course, he's been at it quite a while. And I've raised about $20,000. And I'm pulling, you know, I'm in third place out of a 4-way race. I'm pulling about 15-18%. I think one of them is up in the low 20s. One of them's up in the high 20s. But, you know, those will all change. But the big thing about the race is there's, you know, 30 to 40% of the people who are undecided in this race. I and other people, not just me, but I think everybody's understands that this race will be a very, very close race. And just by looking at the numbers they are now and kind of predicting the outcome. So,
did you ever consider that you obviously hold the balance? I mean, you could essentially pull out right now, throw your support to one of the other candidates, and they'd win.
Yes. I got in this race. There was Jay Ramis was in this race, and the lieutenant governor, the current lieutenant governor, Craig Campbell. I got a tip that, just a rumor kind of thing, hey, Craig Campbell's going to get out. So I got in, and I got in exactly when he was getting out. We thought there'd be a little media about it, be a little way, you know, about earned media. And so that worked out perfectly. He did, Lieutenant Governor Craig Campbell did get out. And then about a month later or so, then along came Mee Treadwell. And so it's an interesting dynamics here. But people have told me, says, Eddie, you may be the factor of who wins. I don't know. But, you know, I never want to be accused of splitting the vote or being the spoiler because I was in before the other guy was. And it was just I thought it would have been a clear race between Jay Ramis and I. I thought you had a more liberal Republican, a more conservative Republican, and there had been a clear choice. With the other guy coming in the race, it kind of, it mixes it up a little bit.
Well, it does. And then just to mix it up more, there was a strange Tea Party endorsement of Treadwell,
right.
and then they reversed that. And you know, that I'm interested to see what you think about that. But I mean, yeah, I could tell you're laughing, but I'm glad you think it's funny.
Oh,
you're known to get a little angry at times.
There's things you know about me, Steve. You've been around the state a long time. There's things you know about me, and when the Tea Party people didn't endorse me. You know, even like you, you're probably going, I don't mean to predict what you were thinking, but you're thinking, what? You're probably scratching your head going, that doesn't make any sense. And unfortunately, the Conservative Patriots group out in the valley, and they have they kind of branch out here in the city also, Anchorage, they were trying to force a square peg down a round hole. They did something that the Tea Party is supposed to be opposed to. They tried to endorse the politically correct candidate and maybe the guy that had the most likelihood of winning. And even though he wasn't really a Tea Party guy and he wasn't really conservative and he's not conservative, so they thought, well, we'll just do it anyways because Eddie's such a lightning rod. He's so controversial. We don't know that that'll... And I'm thinking to myself, that's exactly what the Tea Party is. The Tea Party did what it's supposedly opposed to. And that's why it fell apart. We've done it in our lives.
Yes, we have.
Whenever we've tried to force something, you know I can make this work. I just know I can. I'll just make it work. And it doesn't. And it falls apart. And that's exactly what happened. Because I don't care what side of the aisle on, whether you like me or not, you knew that Mead Treadwell was not the Tea Party guy.
Well, are you ready for some phone calls?
Let's let them rip.
Okay. Eddie Burke is our guest. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. An Anchorage call would be 550-8422. A local call. Email is talk@aprn.org. And the lines are open here at Talk of Alaska. And, Eddie, we got a call from Minto, where Jeremy joins the program. You ever been in Minto?
I don't think so.
No, me either. Jeremy, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Eddie Burke.
Hello. Good morning.
Jeremy, how you doing?
All right.
Hey, where's Minto?
What's that?
Where's Minto?
We're about 40 air miles west of Fairbanks.
Oh, okay.
Minto Flats.
All right, up in the interior there. Okay, great.
Yes. I was just wondering, whatever administration takes office this coming year, if you were elected, would you urge the administration to seek funding out for more VPSOs in the village, such as Governor Parnell kind of promised to do last year?
Well, law and order is an essential part of government, and I lived in Shaktulik, which is northwest of where you're at, and I also went to school in Unalakleet for a while, so I'm familiar with the VPSO system and how it works. And you're absolutely right, because, listen, there's a lot of... I don't want to say there's a lot, but there's a certain amount of crime that goes on within the villages, and it's very, very tough... Are you a VPSO?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Well, let's just say it's tough for people for them to operate, and they need the support in order to make the corrections and make the law enforcement decisions that are needed to be made. And so I am in support of it. You know, we've got a lot of family on family crime that goes on in the villages. We know that there is, not to say that the urban Alaska or here in the city of Anchorage, we're kind of separated from that, but we do need to support the villages in making sure that law and order is provided.
Okay. So, how would you propose that we go about funding, you know, these increases in VPSOs that Governor Parnell promised last year? He promised 15 new positions in VPSOs with increase over 10 years.
Well, here it is. You know,
how we would go around paying for that?
As a chief of staff in the Alaska State Legislature, as a former chief of staff, you understand how the legislative process works. And what way it works is you get 21 votes in the House and 11 in the Senate. And then, of course, get a governor to sign off on it. So it's just about the governor making it a priority and going to the legislature, the members of both houses, and saying, hey, listen, this is a priority. Law and order is essential to America. It's essential to our founding fathers that we were going to have simple law and order here. And I think it's a big priority. And it's about trying to convince 21 members in the House and 11 in the Senate to believe the importance of it. Now, because money is not an option. I mean, money is no problem. Well, obviously, we have billions of it, and we're spending it. We're overspending. So it's just a matter of making it a priority and getting it into the budget. And I am not happy about this budget, to be honest with you. I think we are overspending, but that doesn't mean we can't provide the essential services of government, protect life, liberty, and property.
All right. Well, thank you for answering my question.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, Jeremy Aminto. Eddie Burke is our guest. He's Republican governor, Republican candidate for lieutenant governor of Alaska. And Omar joins the program from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Eddie Burke, Omar.
Thank you. I would like to ask two questions, really. I'm up here in Fairbanks. I'm a university student. And I think, naturally, I'm on the left side of the aisle for sure. But I do see that in this state, the deficits, I guess, in the government could be ratified if we had more taxes. If we had more tax and more business to support those taxes, then we would have more money to spend on more social programs.
So are you talking, have you thought this to the point of like what sort of tax, income tax, a little different tax structure on the oil and gas industry, taxes on other resources, sales tax?
More industry. We should be building more industry in the state. We should have more infrastructure, and we should have companies, private companies, making that happen. The more money that we have coming from other places, especially the lower 48, the better for our own economy.
Omar.
So if we, yes.
Oh, are
yes,
you sir. Kidding me? Really? You want to tax people more? I mean, you don't think this state spends enough money? My goodness alive, we spend more per capita up here than any other state in the nation.
Right, which is exactly why we need to fund it somehow.
Well, fund it? We're funding that's it at correct. A level that's unprecedented.
Okay.
I mean, how much more government do you want, man? You're up and over your eyeballs in government now. I mean, government does everything for you from taking care of our children to giving you a house to educating them. I mean,
isn't that great?
No, it's not great.
Everybody should have.
Government is not the answer. It's the problem, Omar. You gotta wake up and smell the coffee, buddy. Listen, government is the problem, okay? When you get government out of your life, government, you can do more for yourself, my friend.
You were just talking about how the rule of law and everything else needs to be supported by the government.
Well, that's because...
You're also saying that we don't have enough to take care of those things in the first place. So how else do you suppose that you should get the resources to provide those things the government is supposed to provide?
Listen, government has three basic responsibilities: protect life, liberty, and property. All right? Does there need to be some basic form of government? Absolutely. But what happens is government, we've allowed government to evolve into every aspect of our lives until it takes care of us. It's the nanny. Instead of us thinking of ways to do something for ourselves, we think of how government can do something for us. And the only thing we need to figure, only thing that blocks it is trying to figure out some magical way we can get it more money. You know, law enforcement, police and fire, these types of things, basic infrastructure for roads and sewage and water systems, yeah. Things like that. That's government's role. Government's not there to babysit you, man.
I understand. I do think, though, that government is an inherent part of our lives, and we don't need to be fighting against it.
Inherent?
But trying to support it and trying to make it a better one.
All right, Omar.
Trying to make it smaller and bankrupt.
Omar, I want to thank you for your call. Clearly, you got a philosophic difference here, and I'd like to rephrase one of the places I thought you were going, which is increasing the tax base through economic development. What do you think, Eddie Burke, that the state can do to encourage whatever the location of more businesses here, a better business climate? You know, all the things we got going against us. We got high cost of fuel. We've got the high cost of transportation, and some would say we got the high cost of labor. It just costs a lot of money to do business here, and a lot of businesses don't want to locate here because of that.
Right. Well, there's one point that Omar makes and that I agree with, and that is that how to grow business, how to grow industry. And when I lived up in the villages, I recognized recognize that one of the problems in the villages is that there's no real economic opportunities. If we build a road to Nome, a road to Juneau, if we open up Alaska, you know, some people are opposed to Pebble Mine. I'm supportive of Pebble Mine. Dig, baby, dig. Drill, baby, drill. We are a resource state. You can wrap your arms around your tree-hugging, you know, earth bunny stuff all you want. That's great. If it works for you, but here's the situation: we need to open up this state. We have to explore our resources, expand on our resources, develop our resources, and you know some people say, well, you need to say Eddie in a responsible way. Well, that's the only way we do it is in a responsible way. The permitting, the red tape that you have to go through in order to develop our resources in this state is strict, and it should be. I'm an environmentalist just like everybody else. We're all environmentalists. The people who are blocking these economic opportunities, I refer to them as obstructionists, because they get to hide behind this nice, warm, and fuzzy word called, I'm an environmentalist, and I'm for the earth, and if you want to build something, obviously you're not. You know, that's just ridiculous. Like, I'm better than you because I'm an environmentalist. I don't know anybody. I go across the state. I don't know anybody that wants to drink dirty water or breathe dirty air. So develop the state. Let's get these resources in gear.
Let's go to Stu, joins the program from Muldoon. You're on the air, Stu, with Eddie Burke, Republican candidate for lieutenant governor.
Thanks, Eddie. Hey, Eddie, what's it feel like being on a radio station that doesn't stop every, 8 minutes for a ridiculous commercial?
Yeah.
We all love that.
I know. It's pretty cool. I was waiting for the break. I'm going, dang, man, we're still going. I'm waiting. That's pretty cool, Stu.
Yeah, Eddie, I just want to say, I cruise the dial and I stop and listen to you sometimes, but... You know, nobody has time for those inane commercials trying to sell you something that I wouldn't give to my worst enemy. And it's just, you know, why don't you guys get a fundraiser and try to find a way to say something without just throwing a bunch of commercials out there? And, there's nothing but public radio on the dial anymore.
It's the private sector, man. I'm sorry. You know, that's the way it works. This radio station is funded mostly through the public sector, and so therefore...
And donations.
There's people that are committed to not only this radio station, but KAKM, which I'll be on here later in the month on a debate. It's a central part. I mean, but the bottom line is the private sector... you know, the mighty dollar has to rule. And
yeah. Well, if Eddie got better ratings, you know, they could charge more for the commercials.
That's right.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
Thank you, Stu and Muldoon. It's Talk of Alaska. Eddie Burke is with us. He is running for lieutenant governor. What do you think is the, I mean, you feel obviously you're the most conservative of the candidates for lieutenant governor.
Yeah, I am.
Do you think you could run, there's an interesting race for governor right now, and I'm wondering if you feel comfortable with all the candidates.
Sure. Yeah, you know, there's a great spread. The bottom line is Sean Parnell is going to win this race. I mean, I hate to be so out there like, wow, you know, I don't want to spoil anybody's, because I like all the candidates. I'm not getting in a position where I'm going to, you know, people say, well, which gubernatorial candidate do you like? And I said, well, I'm not going to get into that, because if I win and one of them wins and I didn't speak and it wasn't my favorite, then that governor's going to look at you the first day in office and say, hey, listen, you didn't speak highly of me and now we got to work together. And so we've all kind of taken, I think it's his. It's traditional that you just don't get in that discussion. But
well, that's the same thing me Treadwell says. What, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Well, you know, he says it about the senator race.
Right.
You know, and that's how we've, you know, kind of crossed paths a little bit, is that on the senator race, I'm for Joe Miller. There's not a doubt. I mean, Lisa Murkowski is a pro-choice. She's a pro-abortion liberal, and she doesn't deserve to be in office. She's trying to act more conservative, and Joe Miller is absolutely the conservative in that race, and so that's who I'm supporting for United States Senator, Joe Miller.
You never guess what I'm going to do right now, Eddie.
What's that? Take a break.
That's right. But it's only 1 minute long.
Oh, really? Yes. I was thinking you took him at the bottom of the hour. Okay, that's cool.
Eddie Burke is our guest, and he'll be back as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a high-risk chronic medical condition or other uninsurable reasons, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. ACHIA was created by the state legislature to meet the needs of Alaskans, and several plans are available. Talk to an independent insurance broker. Information also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the ACHIA.
It is Talk of Alaska, and we have an interesting race for lieutenant governor in the state of Alaska in the Republican primary. And one of the most interesting candidates is one Eddie Burke, a talk show host, a former gas station owner who's just sort of backed his way into a populist style of politics. And he's here to talk with people from all across the state of Alaska, and it's been kind of an interesting conversation so far, Eddie Burke. You are running for lieutenant governor, and why did you decide to go for a statewide office?
Well, this race has never been about me. It's always been about providing a conservative voice. When Lieutenant Governor Craig Campbell said that he was going to step down, and I don't know what he's going to do, possibly run the railroad or something like that, and it was only Jay Ramerson in the race, I thought, hey, wait a minute. Alaska deserves a conservative voice. I don't have any interest in running for governor or senator or expanding. I think people that know me know that, you know, when I say that, it's true. It's really not about this. It's not about me. My radio program was never about me. It was about a cause. And I believe that the conservative issues need a voice in this state. We have a budget that is just unsustainable. I was standing in front of a room at Bill Sheffield's house where there's a bunch of Republicans there. It was a Republican women's luncheon. And I told him, I said, There's not a person in this room, the governor was standing right there, not a person in this room will raise their hand and say this budget is sustainable. We are pandering. We are doing things that are going in the wrong direction in this state. We have a massive wealth. We have billions in the permanent fund. We have billions in savings. We have a lot of money, but so did California at one time. And look at them. You know, I have three grandchildren, four children, three grandchildren. I'm not prepared in 20 years to look at one of them and say, hey, Papa, or they look at me and say, hey, Papa, what happened to all the money? Oh, well, why do we have to pay an income tax now, Papa? Because, it's because we blew it. Because my generation was so selfish that we had to have everything plus some.
So are you... You know, you have spoken on the permanent fund in the past. It's
right.
Not like you really want to see... Dipping into the permanent fund is the answer.
No.
It was there for a rainy day. This ain't the rainy day.
No.
So you feel first cut spending.
That's absolutely correct.
So, that's a fairly easy thing to say, and then
exactly.
You try and do it, and you see that, whoa, wait a minute. Look at how much of it is payroll. Look at how much of it is education. And all of a sudden you realize, you know, like you want public safety, you probably would want to increase that some. So you got, you know, I'll let you think about what to cut as Lori Townsend walks in from the newsroom and she can give us an update on what's happened with that plane crash in the Dillingham area.
Yeah, it's a tragic situation.
Yeah, because we all scratch our heads when it comes to what specifically would you cut from the budget. So we'll get back, Eddie Burke, in just a second.
All right.
Lori Townsend, have a seat here and tell us what we found out so far.
Well, Steve, AP is saying that... Mitch Rose, the spokesman for the Stevens family, is saying that Senator Stevens is dead. That's all we know at this point, but that's coming across on AP that Mitch Rose is a spokesman for the family, and he's saying that Senator Stevens was killed in the crash.
Right. And what we know so far as well is that there were five fatalities on the airplane.
That's still a bit fuzzy, how many fatalities there are. They're at the site working. The NTSB is in Dillingham now, And so we're hoping to get more confirmation about how many fatalities there actually were.
Do we know if the helicopter made it in and has moved people out?
That, I think, is happening at this point right now, that the helicopter is out there.
Okay. And so, and the weather remains really terrible.
Yes.
Out in Dillingham. And this plane crash essentially happened last night around 7 o'clock north of Dillingham, someplace out around Lake Elecnagik.
Yes, and local fire department people stayed out there with crash victims last night mm-hmm. until someone could get out there today.
Yeah, and they got them in, I guess, by helicopter to a higher elevation. They actually climbed down to the side of the crash.
Put back on my talk radio hat. There was news reports that the Mr. O'Keefe, the former NASA chief, and, of course, Senator Ted Stevens was there, but they were on board with their sons. And, of course, that made me think that maybe Ben Stevens was on board. Has there been any discussion about that, or have you heard anything about who actually the sons were?
No, we haven't heard anything. Ben Stevens' name hasn't come up at all yet.
Okay,
not sure.
Have you also confirmed, though, that there was sons on board? Or have you heard that, or is that
confirmed that there were sons?
It has been in a couple of accounts that there were family members aboard.
Right. Right.
Somebody from GCI. I'm not sure how many people were GCI people.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's difficult to know at this point who was there. And, you know, we're being very careful about what we put out until we can get it confirmed.
Seems like some of the real heroes in this, too, are the people who, I think you alluded to, who spent the night up there trying to help the survivors and maybe those that were hanging on. We obviously won't know the details until much later, but these people who spent the night with them, that's pretty heroic stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And we are able once again to confirm at this point, we have it from a family spokesman for the family of Senator Ted Stevens, that he was among the victims of this fatal plane crash last night.
I'll be back if there are further updates.
All right. Thank you very much, Lori Townsend of APRN. It's Talk of Alaska, and our guest is Eddie Burke. He's running for Lieutenant Governor of Alaska. He's just as stunned as every other one of us are, and kind of the magnitude of this is so enormous that it takes us a while to get our heads around it. Days, really. Let's continue with the calls here. Okay?
Yep, sounds good.
But I do want to get your answer. What do you cut in the budget?
You know, I was asked that question out. You know, there's a lot of things we can cut. There's a lot of social welfare programs. But what I told this one guy that asked me a question out at Evangelos at a debate, we don't have to cut anything. Let's just stop adding to it. I mean, if we just stopped adding to it, we'd be fine. So it's not about going around and taking books out of the library and cutting off public education and food to one-armed crippled children or whatever, you know, somebody wants to throw up there. Just stop adding to it. Just stop spending more than we're taking in. That's the biggest reason why I've always been about raiding the permanent fund, is because they said back in the late 90s when Soren Wirth and Jim Sykes and I and Steve Kahn and all, we all gathered on this deal because we're thinking, hey, well, my side of it said, listen, all you're going to do is get $500 of our permanent fund dividend and then spend it. You're not going to save it. It's not going to bail you out or anything. So look what happened when they had these windfalls, $115 barrel oil. Now it's at $80 or $70. What are they doing? They're not saving anything. They're spending it. In fact, they're spending even more than they're taking in. So.
Okay. Eddie Burke is our guest, and Randy joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Eddie Burke.
Thanks, Steve. It's hard to come on the air after that tragic news.
Yeah.
Mr. Burke, you know, I appreciate you stepping up and taking this courageous move and, you know, really honorable move for running for state office. It can't be easy. It seems like every politician says that state spending's too high and that, you know, they're a fiscal conservative. And, you know, your last answer to Steve didn't really satisfy me. You say that state spending's too high. So give me a number. What's the optimal level for state spending?
I think we ought to roll it back to 02, 03 levels. I mean, how's that for a start? The bottom line is we can't keep. How about $8 billion?
$8 billion. So you take it down $2 billion from where it is now.
Yeah.
And that $2 billion is going to come from?
Hey, we consider that as the job of the lieutenant governor and a governor. Here's the deal. People want to try to get you in a trick box, you know, I call it, because they want to say, oh, well, would you cut this? And then we did this years ago when they tried to take our permit fund. People like you would call up and say, well, where are you going to cut it from? And then we'd say where to cut it from. And then they'd say, oh, well, you can't do that. Like, for instance, merging Alaska Housing and Alaska Industrial and ADA together, you know, like merging those two together. These are cost saving ways. But guess what? Every time we said that, people just go up and say, oh, well, you can't do that. And you can't do that. And oh, they just want to cut like privatization in the education system for all the maintenance and that we do. You know, there's a plethora of reasons for somebody to call up and kind of act like there's no way we can reduce the size of government. That's just ridiculous.
I agree. So we're going to cut $2 billion. So the capital budget was $2.6 billion this year. Yeah. Why don't we just get rid of those earmarks? I mean, that's what happens. Every legislator gets a certain amount of money, and then it goes towards a rock wall here or, you know, this piece of whatever. Let's just say we're going to cut that.
Yeah, here's what I would do if I was, well, first of all, I'm running for lieutenant governor, not governor. So I don't have a lot to say. But what I would do is I'd say, listen, if I was governor, or if I was telling the governor what to do or advising the governor, I said, listen, you bring your department heads in, the commissioners in, and you tell them this is our goal. You go back to your staff and you figure out a way to get there. And because this is the budget that we're going to submit before the legislature, and we're going to make this a priority. You know, the other governors that have come before me, even Sarah Palin, Frank Murkowski, whoever, count them up, have said they're going to cut state spending, and they have it. It's grown. We finally need somebody that'll keep their promise and do it. And I think a lot of people are actually afraid that I might just do what I say.
And cut $2 billion. That's our target.
I would say yes, absolutely.
Good luck to you.
Okay.
All right, Randy, thanks for your call. I enjoyed that conversation. Let's go to David, joins the program from Gakona on the road system. Hello, David. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Eddie Burke.
Hello, Eddie.
Hi.
Hi to you at the station.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey, that's a tragic incident that happened to Ted Stevens. Pretty hard to bring. I've got mixed feelings right now about this, but the thing is, I want to address to you is why not come up to Glen Allen, Valdez, Tok, all over? That's not the main issue. But the main issue in saving money, what I'm thinking about, I'm sitting here at the desk just trying to find out where can we save money. And it came up to me just when I seen a state trooper drive by, and I said, how come them village police officers on the highway around here, why do we need them when we got state troopers in on the highway, and they patrol the highway, but these VPSOs, I don't know what their job is to find, they don't find speeders, I don't think. Because they speed. And anyway, we got four police officers, safety police officers from a village. And there's something like six of us villages on the road. And why can't we utilize most of that money that we spend on these people driving around with the high price of gas and all that?
Yeah.
When they could be stationed in a rural village where there's no access to safety officers, and why can't we send them all up north where it's points and beyond where we can't? I mean, by then it'll be too late for them to react to certain crimes. This on the highway all the way to Anchorage, to Tok, to the border, is patrolled by the state troopers. What I'm trying to say is I don't think we need these village police safety officers around here, because they can utilize, the state can utilize them up there on points where you have to fly or boat or something. We have vehicles. We have everything here, and we're not hurting for any. Well,
okay.
All right. Let me jump in here. here's a point about the VPSOs that are good is that the state troopers maintain the highway, and yes, they can come in and help out with a particular village, but the VPSO often takes care of the immediate issues that's it's immediately surrounding the village. So I think that's the difference. Kind of like the state troopers could respond to anything here in Anchorage, but it's the city police that take care of all the local activities primarily. So it's just, you know, because there would be an argument that says, well, if you got rid of the VPSO, let's say in your area, well, then they'd have to add another trooper to help supplant that, so to speak. So it would cost you more money because a trooper costs more than a VPSO. So it's more of an effective way and a more cost efficient way to create some sort of law of order. But I appreciate the call.
Hey, hold on.
Oh.
One more thing I want to tell you is when the VSPOs, I see them in the village, they drive in with two of them when there's only one state trooper coming to investigate some kind of crime, but these are little crimes that been enacted, maybe somebody drunk, maybe somebody fighting or something, and it I don't think we need two VSPOs when they can be at other villages. That's all.
Well, you know, sometimes domestic violence and these things that you call small often are the ones that escalate into very serious issues. Any police officer, my dad was a former DEA agent, a former cop, and the one thing that I've learned with being around the police is that the domestic violence or a complaint call to disturbance, family disturbance, is sometimes the most volatile issue you'll get into, and they go they can get quite bad real quick. So that's why it's often good to have a second person there in order to make sure that initial officer is protected.
Well, the thing is, I'm trying to say is why spend two people out there if there's domestic violence, they're shooting out there, for sure. VSPO's gonna come accompany the state troopers. State troopers are the first ones should be out there. Unless somebody's dying or something, then you call 911 and they will contact anybody. But the thing is, we got two VSPO's driving around. I don't see them doing anything. I go around.
I got you. Yeah, I think we have your point, David. And I want to thank you for your call from Gakona. You know,
let's save some money and let's utilize them up to where it's so remote where they don't have access to state trooper
right.
or VSPO.
I understand.
Right away, we need that. That may save lives. That's what. The law department is trying to do is save lives anyway.
All right. Thank you, David. Thank you for your call for Eddie Burke. Eddie Burke is our guest. He's running for lieutenant governor as a Republican. Let's talk of Alaska. Let's get one more call in here before the break. Leo and Bethel, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. What is your take on the high sea fisheries? And other question is, what do you think about the high cost of living here in Alaska?
Well, let me take the high cost of living in Alaska. You know, that goes back to the point of subsidizing villages and subsidizing the bush and all, and also gets back to where they try to reorganize or add more legislators in order to give the bush a stronger vote in more of the rural areas. Here it is. Create jobs. Create economic opportunities. Expand Alaska's resource development. It doesn't matter if you're children who are growing up in Kenai area, people are growing up in Ketchikan, southeast, people are growing up in the bush, they'll stay there because there's no jobs, there's no economic opportunities. People want to raise their families. We have to get off the dime up here in Alaska and say, listen, we need a road to Nome. We need a road to Juneau. We need this rail expansion that's happening all up and down through the interior. We need the port expansion over here across the way in Wasilla. It doesn't matter if you're in Barrow or if you're in southeast or out at Dutch Harbor. All around Alaska, we have to start developing our resources and expand the state because the only way people can keep going is if there's jobs and economic opportunities. That's plain and simple. The fisheries issues, I'm not real familiar with the fisheries issue, but you know, maybe you can enlighten me on it.
Leo,
Yeah, the high sea fisheries where all those trawlers are depleting everything in on the bottom of the Bering Sea, making it very difficult for the Yukon to get their salmon, as per se on the news. That we get them, Yamana, all the way up to the Canadian border, they haven't been getting any salmon lately.
All right. Thank you, Leo.
What I'm talking about is the bycatch
by the trawl fleet.
Oh, catching
quite a few king salmon
that otherwise
would go up the Yukon River.
So they're chipping into the resources that come up through the the private, well, not the private streams, but the smaller streams.
Right. Now, the federal regulators have tightened down on it some, and some would say not enough.
Yeah.
As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. If you're looking to start or grow your own business, Alaska SourceLink can help. They're a web-based referral center for Alaskans seeking business assistance with more than 100 resource partners across the state. For more information or to access resources online, go to www.aksourcelink.com. Connecting businesses to the help they need when they need it. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development.
It's Talk of Alaska, and Eddie Burke is our guest. Eddie's a talk show host in Alaska. He's definitely a right-winger, and he says he's running for lieutenant governor as a Republican to try and bring a conservative voice to state government. He says, it's not about me. It's about having a conservative voice there. Well, Eddie, you know, lieutenant governor does have a couple of responsibilities, and one is, of course, being part of the team with the governor, but there is the business of running the Division of Elections, and there's the division, the business of signing regulations.
Right.
You actually get to sign every single regulation.
And that's a big deal, because I have a friend who has a farm out in the valley, and, you know, he says, Eddie, he says, I got this herd of cattle, and he says, and not cattle, but they're cows, and anyways, and so he says, there's a stream that runs down the middle of my property. He says, I have to adhere to 22 different regulations in order to cross that stream with this herd. He goes, it's just ridiculous. And that just helps make my point, that it's important that we elect a lieutenant governor that understands how business has to operate, and that and how we have to get this economy going. As a small business owner, I've owned a few businesses and all. I was a young entrepreneur of the Small Business Administration. Gave me an award in 1991 as the small business person in the whole Northwest region. I understand what it's like to make a payroll. I understand what it's like to deal with customers and deal with government regulations. That's so important that we have somebody in office that recognizes that how business has to overcome these regulations. It's vital. And so I think that people should be looking into that when they're electing lieutenant governor. Now, you had another question in that.
Division of Elections.
Oh, the Division of Elections. You know, I talked to Lieutenant Governor Craig Campbell here a few weeks ago, and something that they're working on is to improve and update the Division of Elections, a new software. The only catch is working with this national company, is that the information, Craig wants to make sure that the information that we have, our voters list, stays in Alaska, and that we only have the rights to, and it doesn't get spread out to whoever and wherever. So, and also the other issue is that we haven't purged our voting records in over a decade. So, you know, nothing against dead people, but when dead people vote, that's a problem. So, and it's happening, and so therefore that needs to be corrected.
That's interesting. So you've talked with Craig Campbell.
I have.
And you decided to get into this race when he pulled out.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. I didn't talk to him prior.
Mm-hmm.
I never talked to him prior. I talked to him after the decision was made, because I never wanted anybody to ever say that, okay, well, you talked to Craig, and he talked to you, and he told you, no, that never happened.
I'm glad we have that clear. Lori Townsend has walked into the room again from the newsroom. What do you have?
Well, the latest update is in reference to Ben Stevens.
Yes.
A source called and said that the vice president of marketing for Delta Western, a fuel hauler up north, said that he was receiving email from Ben Stevens last night from from a fuel vessel somewhere around the Seward Peninsula at about midnight last night. So Ben Stevens is hauling fuel. He was not on board that plane.
All right. All right. Thank you very much.
Good to know.
Glad,
thank you for
glad
that.
Glad to have the update from the newsroom. It's Talk of Alaska, and of course, that's in relation to the plane crash north of Dillingham, not far from Lake Elecnagik, where there were 9 people aboard the plane, and we're pretty sure that there are 5 dead, and among them is confirmed to be Senator Ted Stevens. Well, Eddie Burke, we just got a few more minutes, and I hesitate to do this, but I know you mentioned living in, I think, in Buckland for a while.
Shaktulik. And I went to school in Unalakleet for a little while when I was in 8th grade. My dad was a PHS foreman. After he got out of DEA, he became a public health service foreman in building water and sewer projects in the village. And so we built a big washateria there in Shaktulik. And then I went to school in Unalakleet and had a chance to travel around the bush when I was about in 7th, 8th, 9th grade.
Did you ever get all the way up to the Kobuk River and up in there?
No. I've been to Barrow, been to Kotsby. I've been all over Alaska.
Okay. Well, then you probably haven't been in Deering.
Deering? I don't think. No. I've never been in Deering.
Well, then meet Marlene. Marlene from Deering. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Eddie Burke.
Yeah, our prayers go out to Senator Stevens and all the people around surrounding this crash. But I am concerned about the powers and duties that going on down there from Juneau. We have too much at stake here in the villages, losing too much money from every department down there in the Juneau, and I would like to see a little, if they never make that pamphlet, what the powers and duties of senators and representatives and lieutenant governor and governor is supposed to be doing for us. Not. It's not a free ride like how it's been going past few years, and we're losing too much here in the villages. It's no fun when they make fun of us like this and give us nothing. After they make money from our villages, it's not like. And good luck and be nice to everybody down in Juneau.
Thank you.
For the villages.
Hey, listen. Here, and I want you to take this right. But I don't want to do anything for you. It's not government's job to do something for you. What I want to do is get out of your way so that you can do something for yourself. That is such a powerful statement, and I'm not the one that made it up. But that is the issue, is that government, we have to build these opportunities, create opportunities for people, expand our resource development out in the bushes, bush areas, in the rural areas.
That's what they are saying, the politicians. And look, Deering is an old gold mine settlement. Do you see us using fancy dresses and tuxedos? I don't think so. They make too much money off of the gold back there, and we end up with nothing.
All right. Maureen, I want to thank you. We're just out of time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, dear.
All right. Yeah, Eddie Burke, one thing is happening is with high fuel prices in the bush.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's killing people.
It is.
It's taking all the cash out of the economy. Is there anything that can be done besides stimulating jobs? It just seems like it's worse than people think.
Well,
when you get out there and actually see it.
Here's the biggest problem is we don't have a refinery as a service station owner for a decade or more. You know, people used to come up from the lower 48 and say, wow, your gas price is so cheap. Well, the reason they're not cheap today is because Tesoro is the only refinery. That's it. Tesoro is the only refinery. They're refining 95% of the motor fuel. Flint Hills is doing some diesel and some jet fuel. But anyways, that's our problem, is creating more refineries in this state.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Steve.
All right.
It's a pleasure.
Coming up on Thursday, Sean Parnell, incumbent governor, on Talk of Alaska. Kristen Spack, Josh Edge, Paige Corona, and the crew. I'm Steve Heimel.
Made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. If you smoke, odds are you want to quit. And if you want to quit, you're probably finding it tough to do. The Alaska Tobacco Quit Line can help. The average smoker tries 10 times before they quit for good. You can increase your chances by calling the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line. A trained quit coach is waiting for your call. Give it a shot. It's free and it works. Call the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line at 1-888-842-7848. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.